Der Fußball ist zurück in der zweiten Liga.
Bravo, macht Tempo, wartet auf Harte. Zwanke kommt und jetzt ist es Klos. Also Arminia Bielefeld.
Penny, 2-0. 2-0 für den FC St. Pauli.
Diese
Flanke, Tor, nächster Treffer.
Ist heuer Fernandes mit vorne. Ja klar ist er mit vorne. Kittel mit der Ecke, Feuerball und da!
Guten Tag and welcome to another edition of the Zweite Bundesliga podcast. On today's edition, we'll be discussing all the action from match day 20. Once again, if there was a script, it was filled with drama, action, and just so much more. It was a fantastic match day for the neutral. There are a lot of people who were left with broken hearts, but some very much happier than the others. Of course, alongside me to discuss all the action from the weekend is the one and only Eva Lottebola. Eva, good morning to you. Well, a lot happened this weekend. There were the movers and shakers. Some teams who hadn't won since October found victory in a very surprising way. Others, on the other hand, they went on the comeback route. We saw a few teams have to do it the hard way, but did it they did. That made no sense. But another great weekend of football for us.
yeah, for some better than others, I would say. But yeah, I think some stage I looked into the kick tip, I was like, this is not my week. I think I have like 2 points, more than six. I have 6 points. That was a fantastic week. I'm such an expert. No, but I think, I was at work at Saturday, and there was this one game where I got so many messages, like, from people who were at the game, and obviously, like, from the apps and stuff, and it was just like, what is happening? And then I watched, like, the Sportshow in the evening. I was like, okay, this is, why does it feel like a last match day kind of match day? But I mean, this is why we love the league. We keep telling it. It makes it just very, very difficult for us to analyze it and to be experts in any way, or to confidently say that we're experts. Because let's be honest, in the end, the league does what it wants and just doesn't want people to be experts on them. But I mean, that's the fun about it, right?
Yeah, I mean, the kick tip, surprisingly, is really close. And whenever someone goes big, it is usually you have to be a bit lucky. That's like football as well. One thing that we were very lucky and we were treated to was a primetime fixture that was very much worth the time slot. And when you get third versus second, sometimes you get those kind of safe, dull, mundane performances. This game between Heidenheim and Hamburger SV was anything but. At a capacity crowd, 15,000 at the Voigt Arena, saw a classic, a Zweite Bundesliga classic that will ultimately be known as a tale of two halves. It's hate to say it, but it is the fact of the matter. Heidenheim were superior in the first half, and they had no bones about it. They were in a hurry to set the advantage, which started on 27 minutes when Dennis Tomala found Jan-Niklas Bester with his sixth goal of the campaign. Then a couple of minutes later, Marnon Busch found Jan Schupner with the header, and then Tomala assisting Tim Kleindienst, who was able to get past Javi Montero, to make it 3-0 at the break. 3 goals in 13 minutes, and it would have been fair to say that Hamburg were absolutely cooked like a nice juicy hamburger. But someone forgot to tell the chefs, that was a bad joke, I'm sorry. But someone forgot to tell the cooks in that kitchen that this game was all but over, because they went on a flurry of their own. A string of changes, in particular, the introduction of Laszlo Benes, really changed the game in midfield. And, well, they would get their goal on 72 minutes when Andras Nemeth got his second in consecutive games, then Robert Glatzel on 79 minutes, and then Bakary Yata on 88 minutes, made it 3-3. So 3 goals in 16 minutes. And it was very much anything you can do, I can do better. And in the end, the result was a 3-3. And a very differing of emotions on both sidelines. Tim Walter was made perhaps a little bit happy, but calm. Frank Schmidt looked like he was about to punch someone. He was furious with the ultimate collapse of a team that was very much comfortably in the lead of the game. And the numbers suggest that Heidenheim had plenty of chances comparative to Hamburg. It was not a very typical Hamburg performance. They were on the back foot for a lot of it, despite having the lion's share of possession. But you have to credit Hamburg, because on so many occasions we think of them as a team that would have lied down in this kind of situation away at Heidenheim, as we know, the best team at home. But we forget Hamburg are one of the best teams away from home, and they showed that very much in the second half.
Yeah, and I mean, those are the kind of performances where you might start to think, is it going to be the year? Because in games where, let's be honest, Heidenheim should have been up like 4-0 shortly after halftime. And then they don't do that. And then we have that momentum, which you know in football. And you could kind of feel it. Like, there was this, when you just pointed it out, when Nemat scored that goal. And then there was a short period of time where I thought, okay, either Heidenheim is going to score the fourth one now, and then like the momentum is killed, or they're completely going to say, okay, that's not going to happen. They've won back, but I mean, we're stable, we're solid. It's not going to happen because we were the better team. But they completely forgot how to play football afterwards. And that was a Heidenheim defense I haven't seen in a very, very long time. There were such easy mistakes. And I mean, in my opinion, they could have been happy that Müller wasn't sent off with a red card in the end. Because I saw that plenty of times. I think it's after the 3-3. I attacks basically one of the Hamburg players and like puts his hand at least near the face. I don't have the exact scene in my head anymore. They don't really show it in the highlights as well, which was a bit weird. But I mean, in my opinion, this is like personal. That's an attack on another player. And we normally, like, if we see that in midfield, this is normally a red card, especially since we have the VAR. I mean, speaking about the VAR, I think it was at the same time a good and a very bad weekend for it. Once again, consistency wasn't something we were really looking forward to. But yeah, I mean, in the end, I think for players like Montero, it was really good that they got a point here. But defensively, I think still that there are a couple of question marks. You have Haya in that first for that second goal, where he's far too away from Schöpner. You spoke about Montero. I mean, he's very young, he's new in the team, but still, like, this is something they have to stop. For Heidenheim, I feel like we can just say what we said before. There's no way they should have lost this. And I mean, Frank Schmidt said in an interview afterwards, like, that shouldn't have happened. He doesn't give Müller any sort of grief on that, but still, I don't really know what happened there. And I mean, I said this before, and it's not to be mean or disrespectful, but I sometimes wonder if, like, the Heidenheim as a fan cultural, from a fan culture perspective, would be a bit different if that would have happened. Because sometimes you know that there is, when you see your team is getting in that position where it might slip away, you sometimes have the stadium behind you who doesn't let you do that. So I'm not completely sure if that's something like I think we said this before, sometimes this is like the small margin why Heidenheim has the feeling it doesn't have to push their limits, because they're completely fine where they are. The fans are completely fine where they are. But I do wonder sometimes. if that would have made a difference in this game.
It is interesting. I mean, it was for what it was worth. It was overall a really good atmosphere, and it had the makings of a really high intensity, high value game, and it was that. I think the one thing that became very noticeable for me was the changes that Volta made at halftime. He switched to a back three, took Montero out, and you know, and moved Muheim to as a left center back, Königsdorfer playing as more of a full back, a left wing back per se. And look, you know, those changes worked for them. They were a lot more stable defensively. The high quality chances that they gave up in the first half weren't as prevalent. But yeah, I think ultimately it only benefited one team, this result, and it was neither of the two teams. On the weekend, Heidenheim are again at home to Nuremberg. Hamburg are back at home on Sunday against Arminia Bielefeld. This is a world feed game. The team that benefited from this result was, of course, Darmstadt, but they didn't have it easy either when they hosted Eintracht Braunschweig on Sunday afternoon. This was one of the two world feed games of match day 20. This was a hard game, really. This was a game where VAR was very, very active. And I would say, for the most part, it got it right, which was good to see. The first instance we saw VAR was early in the second half, a corner coming in for Braunschweig, and Christopher Zimmermann, a stray hand, and that's what it was, a stray hand in a unnatural position, and correctly given as a penalty. Manuel Winsheimer scores his third of the season, and you're thinking, here we go, Braunschweig are on something here. But someone who hasn't been there, who no one has seemed to be able to stop, has been Matthias Honsack, who'd scored four goals in his last two competitive games, two in the Cup, two against Sandhausen. He would score again on 82 minutes, his third of the campaign. He almost scored a couple of times in this game. Then VAR was involved again. It seemed like another penalty for Braunschweig, though this one was taken away. Initially given as a penalty by Dr. Robert Kamka, but taken away as it was seen as not a foul. It was seen as not a foul, and I would tend to agree. I think it was the right decision. There's one in the other game, the next game we're going to talk about, which I don't think should have been a penalty, but that's because I'll explain that when we get to it. Then Darmstadt would win the game. This is just how they do it. I don't know how they keep getting away with it, but they just do it. They were the better team, but they find a way. Initially called for offside for Philipp Tietz, who scored the goal, but with further inspection, they were onside. Game, set, and match. 2-1 win for Darmstadt. They're now 4 points clear ahead of Hamburg, and they've got two really important games in the next three. For Braunschweig, it's not ideal. They would have loved to have taken a point here. They do fall down, especially with the wins to Karlsruhe and Nuremberg, who we'll talk about in a moment. They just find a way, do Darmstadt. It's never pretty. It's not exciting, but they find ways. For so long in this game, it didn't look like they were going to find the answer to break Yasmin Fasic. They did have a goal taken away for offside, it was a foul, which was correct in my eyes, because he clearly just bowled him over like a 10-pin bowling pin, just straight through strike. But yeah, they found a way again here, and how important it is to have another goal scorer, just being a bit more versatile in the final third. And Honsack has continued his really hot start to the second half of the season.
Yeah, I mean, as a Braunschweig fan, I would have been very disappointed, because in my opinion, their first half was good. I mean, Darmstadt didn't really had a lot to offer in that first half. It was rather disappointing. I mean, obviously they don't have to do that much. We know that this is like a typical Darmstadt game where we know they're going to win it in the end. If you're going to talk about the first penalty. The problem where I'm at this point is with the VAR is that obviously the decision was correct, But first of all, it surprises me a bit because, in my opinion, Kamka has a very good view on the scene in the first place. And it's not a handball, like, in, like, after a set piece situation where there are a lot of players in, like, a very small space. But you can actually see it very clearly that there is a hand where a hand shouldn't belong, and that is not one of the Braunschweig players, because you can see, like, the blue shape. And if that's not enough, it takes, like, 3 minutes to give that penalty. And this is not how VAR should take place. We always talked about that originally and initially it was put in to overrule clear mistakes. In my opinion, clear mistakes can be overruled quite quickly. But we see now that I would say 4 out of 5 VAR decisions that are being discussed, the referee goes out and looks at it himself. And that takes ages. Sometimes the time is being put on, like we've seen 7 minutes of extra time and stuff in the first half even, but sometimes it is not. And I think we always have to look, it's like, this is not a difficult scene to decide. And even for the second penalty, which was given for Braunschweig, which was taken away, don't give it, but don't discuss it over 5 minutes. If you need to discuss it for 5 minutes, the initial decision wasn't a clear mistake, in my opinion. Like, this is, you could see that even in Tiet's face. First of all, like the official, I think the DFL or whatever, just like the Sportcast or whatever, they were very horrible in this game because they were never showing the referee for his decision, but they were kind of filming the fans or whatever, but they were never filming the person responsible for the decision coming up. So I feel like even in the Bundesliga, there was a decision on the weekend in the Köln against Frankfurt match where I always say, I don't want that scene to be a handball, but with everything I've seen this season with the new rules and stuff, I thought it's going to be a penalty. And this is, I think, overanalyzing everything. This is where I have problems. And then obviously for Braunschweig, everything came together. You had Gechter who had to be subbed off because there was a free kick by Darmstadt and he got the ball fully in the head and he had to be brought into the hospital. Also very, you can basically see that he can't stand. So he goes and walking and he falls into the goal. And Darmstadt fans have nothing better to do than to just shout it. And I was like, there is, like, normally, this is something I like about football, that normally fans, no matter which club they support, they have a very good feeling on when to basically shut up. And this wasn't the case. And I think Manu Winsheimer basically went up to the fans and was like, he's unconscious. Do you, like, cannot do this right now? So, yeah, this is, and I was wondering a bit why Darmstadt fans weren't doing, Darmstadt players weren't doing the same, but okay. So you had Gechter off, you have Nathan de Medina being sent off with a second red card, which was a bit stupid. At the same time, second yellows this match day were very weirdly given away or not given. That's another thing. But yeah, I mean, for Braunschweig, I mean, they really, really hope that Behrendt and Benkovic are returning at some point soon, because they don't really have, their defending lines are not really there. But obviously, all the best, and that's going to be the last thing I'm going to say about this game, all the best to Linus Gechter. I hope he makes a full recovery, and yeah, I hope he's going to be fine.
Yeah, I thought I wasn't hearing things when reviewing this game, that there were boos and jeers over a guy who was clearly concussed and couldn't move under his own powers. Just thought that was bizarre. You don't want to throw words like classless and all of that around, but it was pretty poor. I mean, that's, you know, and I'm sure that there might be some Darmstadt fans who will be a bit upset that these words are being uttered, but hey, guy's hurt. I mean, if it was the other way round, this is the perspective we need. If it's the other way round and, you know, the opposition fan doesn't show some sort of restraint, bit of solidarity, bit of compassion, you know, you'd be upset. So that's the last thing on that one. But, yeah.
And just quickly, you don't even need to show compassion. Just if obviously, like, if it's on the other side of the pitch, maybe, but it's happening right in front of you. You could see that they couldn't walk.
Like, yeah.
Probably just shut up.
It's just respect. It's just the respect, and it's just disappointing. Obviously, it was at a critical juncture in the game. There was a lot happening, but you know, got to have a bit of perspective. After all, he's a person. He's a human being. You know. So yeah, we hope so. But yeah, hope he's okay and recovering. Probably doesn't play this week, which is the right thing for him to recover. But yeah, they are starting to run real thin on central defensive options. So it'll be interesting to see what Michael Schiele comes up with in their game against Holstein Kiel, whilst Darmstadt travel north there at Hansa Rostock before they have two massive games. They have three primetime games in a row. I don't know why this one is primetime, but I don't do the schedule. Let's move on to one of the other crazy games that happened on match day 20. It was Hanover and Paderborn at the Heinz von Heiden Arena. This game was just stupid. It was silly. And the opening 10 minutes really epitomized what a ridiculous game this was. Just littered with defensive errors, and almost as if, I don't want to win this game, you should win it. And no, actually, you know what? I changed my mind. I don't want to win this game. Because it started like Hanover were on, but they benefited from some truly terrible mistakes. And Cedric Toikert was the beneficiary of both of those early goals. He scored twice in the opening 4 minutes. The second one in particular is the one that I'm aggrieved of most. I don't know why Yannis Hoyer leaves the ball. Wasn't the only player who had that a similar situation. Karlsruhe game, very similar. Defense just decides, nah, I'm under no pressure. And then Toikert zooms past. Clinical finish in the end. 2-0 after 4 minutes. You're thinking, hey, Hanover have come to play. And then they were very quick to give the first goal back. Robert Leipertz, who's been in scintillating form, he scored to make his 10th goal of the season. And this next goal is the one that I have grievance about in terms of the penalty. Now, there was a foul against Julian Berner on Robert Leipertz, which was given as a penalty by referee Benjamin Curtis. However, in my opinion, there was a foul prior to the penalty given, where Marvin Pirinha takes out a Hanover player. In my opinion, he does not take the ball. It is clearly a foul. And I don't understand why that wasn't checked. I'm assuming that they can't look at that. But to me, that looks like a foul by Pirinha. I can't remember who the Hanover player was. But it looks like a foul to me, and it shouldn't have been a penalty. Regardless, Frommer's there. He shoots, he scores, he gets going against his old club. It's 2-2 at the break. Paderborn continued the goal-scoring run in the second half. Robert Leipertz making it his second of the game, 11 for the season, and then Sir Lloyd Conte getting a fourth on 71 minutes. Hanover did get a goal back just 7 minutes before normal time through Maximilian Bayer, but it wasn't enough. It means Hanover have lost three in a row to start the new season, the new campaign, whereas Paderborn, on the other hand, they've won three on the bounce, and that win puts them into fourth place. That lot happened in this game, for better or for worse. We saw 7 goals, which was great for the neutrals, as this was the other world feed game. But my smooth brain can't comprehend the initial penalty decision, nor can it comprehend how you can be so defensively naive in the early stages of games. Whether they miss Phil Neumann that much, Hanover, I'm not so sure. But they just look so disjointed in the back third that Paderborn could have done anything in the game and they would have looked likely to score.
And I mean, I think someone we have to talk about here is Julian Berna. I mean, he gives the assist for the second goal. At the same time, he's more or less responsible for the first Paderborn goal, because he goes out, like, he moves out of the formation to do nothing. That irritated me a bit, to say the least. Not so much as a Bielefeld fan who've seen him doing that. But, like, I mean, you could actually talk about both defensive behaviors. I mean, there were at least twice there was this scene where, like, five Paderborn players are in the box and they do nothing to defend. This is for the first goal. I mean, Teuter can just do what he wants. There's nobody in any way running towards him to do anything. So that was something I couldn't really understand. Obviously, you talked about Højer miscalculating, but I mean, this was central defenders doing whatever they want in miscalculating balls. Was a theme that match day. And if we talk about the penalty, in the end, I would tend to agree with the foul, but in the end, I'm sorry to say it that way, but if you're so not in any way in the mood to defend that situation with such an unnecessary penalty from the build-up, like, Paderborn had three chances to score here, even without the penalty, because you have a ball going out from Zila, where I'm not sure whether, like, that was the right direction to play in, the right space to play in, especially if you know what Paderborn can do when they put pressure on other players. And then with one pass, they can completely disable your whole team. Then, obviously, not sure if Tila can just grab the ball. And whatever Berna does afterwards is just... It just amazes me. Like, it just amazes me, because first I thought you're talking about that contact isn't a penalty. But I mean, you could, in a way, you can see in the face of Benjamin Cortes, like, I'm very sorry, but like, I don't really have any other choice.
Oh no, in that scene where Leipertz is fouled, like, that's a stone penalty. But there's seconds before, yeah. Yeah, like, to me, that's a foul.
And maybe that's, once again, this is why it would be so, so helpful if we would have the communication. If Cortes says, oh, I saw that, but it wasn't a foul to me.
Yeah.
Then we're fine. Yeah. If he hasn't seen it, and then he looks at it and says, okay, it's a foul, so I didn't really, that wasn't in my clear line of sight, I didn't see it, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's why, please, 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 transparency of the VAR. But yeah, I think want to talk about that second Leipertz goal, which for me is the most beautiful goal of the whole game, with Muslija. He's not being attacked by Maroja. Beautiful through ball, to Rohr, and Rohr, what he does on the sideline is perfect. It's very, very nice to look at, and then obviously, like, Putz doesn't have to do much anymore, but, like, the two, sometimes I want, like, we obviously know we have Todd as Mona, sometimes I want an assist of the month, because sometimes it's not appreciated enough how good the build-up to a goal is.
I mean, it would classify as a hockey assist, because he's the instigator, but, you know, I didn't know Maxi Rua had that kind of game. He just blew by his defender. And then obviously just the cutback, nice and easy, like, and finding Leipertz, who just you know, when he left Heidenheim the first time to go to Ingolstadt and he just kind of bombed out a bit, you know, he came back to Heidenheim, knew this is all familiar. He is just having the season of his life. And whether this is sustainable or not, progressing throughout his time at Paderborn, who knows? But blimey, he is absolutely just, he's got the rocket fuel going. And he's their team's top scorer. And the fact that they've got also such a diverse range of goal scorers, they are still the league's top goal scorers. It's optimistic. And they've got Kaiserslautern on Friday night, which is going to be a mega game in general. 4v5. They're both trying to get in the mix. We love to see it. Hanover, on the other hand, they're away at Jan Regensburg, and they are desperate to turn their season around. Let's take our first break. Ooh, we've gone through half an hour. Incredible. We should take a break. On the other side, we'll get to our Group 2 games, and we're going to start at the Millen Tor when St. Pauli hosted Kaiserslautern. Kaiserslautern have been in excellent form. 5 wins from their last 5, and they travel to the Millen Tor hoping to make it 6. St. Pauli have won 2 out of their 2 games under Fabian Hürzeler, and they were also hoping to continue this good form. On a collision course, obviously, there could only be one winner. This game was pretty controlled and dominated by one team, and that was the hosts, who had chance after chance after chance. And it seemed for a long time that Kaiserslautern were going to be resilient and hold on for a 0-0. But one man in particular had other ideas, and it was Connor Metcalf. For those who aren't listening at the back, when Connor Metcalf starts, good things happen. But we should also commend the play, which was Eric Smith, who patiently waited and waited and waited, and then took his chance with a delicate through ball. Eric Dorm, the World Cup winner, was completely lost, you know, like his form for the last 8 seasons. And Metcalf, one-time finish. Luter, a bit unlucky, but a great finish nonetheless. And that's the one goal in this game. Kaiserslautern had a chance late through Lobinger. That was denied by Medic, but ultimately a pretty limpless performance from Kaiserslautern. What does this mean? It means that St. Pauli have won 3 on the bounce with the new manager, and they're unbeaten in the last 5. They remain 9th. They're now 2 points behind Holstein Kiel and Hanover, but more importantly, they are 6 points clear of the 16th placed Arminia Bielefeld in the relegation playoff. This is positive for St. Pauli, who, you know, entered the winter break in serious strife. Let's discuss. One thing was clear is that they won the midfield battle. Jackson Irvine was superb. Metcalf, superb. There's a theme here. Need more Australians in the Zweite Bundesliga. But this was always going to be a big game for St. Pauli. A good test. They'd won their last two games previously against a side who'd just been absolutely on it. This was a great result for them, not only to win the game, but also for their defence to keep another clean sheet.
Yeah, and I mean, 2 things. First of all, we probably have to apologise to Fabian Hürzeler, who we were sceptical about, I think, a bit.
I mean, he had no prior head coaching experience,
It felt a bit like just doing a second team of shows, to put it there. But I mean, as of now, it works very well. And then second of all, how important it is to have no journalist in press conference after the game. Tim Eckstein from the Millen Tor asked both Dirk Schuster and Fabian Hürzeler questions. And especially, both coaches gave their statements to the game. And Schuster said something about that their tactic, especially in the first half, didn't really work out. So Tim asked whether it had something to do that Opoku was really, really focused on Paccarada, which gave Harter the room in midfield, and that someone like Eric Smith had room as well, which you could see, for example, for the second for their goal in the second half. And Schuster said that it was a very good analysis of what was wrong, and that, like, from time to time they had 3 players going on one, like, had both central defenders and your number 6 on that one player, and at the same time creating too much space and not really defending that player at the same time. So I found that very interesting, and that's why I think it's for people like us, but also in general, it's really, really good to have journalists like Tim in the room to ask those questions. He asked Fabio Nuzzo that question as well. He was not so openly about his decisions. It's always the word every week. I do apologize. But yeah, I do find it like, I can highly recommend everything, obviously, that Minotaur does in writing, but also like he was the only one asking questions in this press conference. It's a bit like everyone else probably would have felt a bit stupid asking questions afterwards after your opponent's coach said, "That's a very good analysis."
Yeah.
but honestly, that was really good. And for Hürzele, I mean, Conor Metcalf has been fantastic under him. He came as a defending player to St. Pauli, and under Hürzele, he has played in those three games, obviously, has played a lot. Very right forward player. We love to see it. And as you've mentioned, the goal was very, very beautiful as well. We've seen some couple of games where either your defending players can't really manage it across from the goalkeepers, or you've seen where one ball very, very magically just shuts down whole defense, as we talked about the Leipzig goal against Hannover, as well as here, one ball, and yeah, that was really good. And I mean, I don't know about you, but in maybe Rapp can be happy he wasn't sent off. I mean, we have two games where the second yellow was given rightly, but maybe at the same time a bit harsh. We don't really know. I mean, you had obviously we talked about the Demidina being sent off. Then you have Rapp, who in my opinion should have been sent off. And then you have the Karlsruhe Fürth game, where Ambrosio was sent off. Where I would say, if you take like the decisions, for example, from the St. Pauli Kaiserslautern game, but also like Bielefeld Rostock with Anna Nu, where I don't really see like where is the line. And obviously, yeah, in my opinion, maybe he could have been sent off in this game, especially if we see. And I mean, Kaiserslautern pulled a lot of fouls in this game, 12 to 22, 5 to. And if you like, this is as well, you had a total of 11 yellow cards.
Yeah.
In this game, which might hint that he was handing out cards very freely in this game. Like, he was Oprah all over. So, yeah, not sure if you could have maybe think about a second yellow here. But, I was all in all, I was very impressed with St. Pauli, very controlled, very physical. They had problems with creating chances. But the best thing, what they did, was keeping Kaiserslautern in their own half. They only had the one chance with Opoku. Yeah. All in all, Kaiserslautern did too little too late in this game. I mean, they had those last minutes. Deserved win for St. Pauli. And I mean, this is what we said when we came back, and this is what we keep repeating. Those first three games of the first month coming back into the season are going to be so vital. And then you have clubs like Hannover, who have three defeats in a row, and you have St. Pauli, who have three wins in a row. So you can see how fast things are changing in this league, and how important it is to keep going. Obviously for Kaiserslautern, it won't hurt them too much, although I'm going to be like, the game against Paderborn, I mean, they traveled twice or like twice in a row away from home. That's going to be a very interesting game. And I mean, it's a World Feed game. So if I'm correct, I think you've already mentioned that. But I would, if the time suits you in any way, would highly recommend to watch this, because I would assume this could be an interesting game to watch.
I would agree. There's a good chance we could see a lot of goals. Really interesting to see how Kaiserslautern will set up in that game as well. They gave Nikolai Rapp a first start on the weekend with alongside Nyhus in that double pivot, which was fine. Like, that's all it was. It was a fine move, but you'd love to see one of the double pivots be a bit more aggressive going forward. I thought they were a bit lifeless in that final third, which made it a lot easier for the back three to not feel as under pressure as they would have otherwise. The one thing I will say is, when rewatching the highlights, I appreciate the sports show deciding to have in the middle of the highlights, they had a compilation of Martin Pedersen giving out all these yellow cards, which someone's got to make a gif for that, because that was bloody hilarious. We've all felt it at one moment in time, but yeah, that was some really good editing. We talk about things not being edited well. That was edited particularly well. I already mentioned about Kaiserslautern on the road. St. Pauli also on the road there at Magdeburg on Saturday afternoon, so they're hoping to make it four on the bounce. Speaking of Magdeburg, let's talk about their game. They were at Kiel on Saturday afternoon, a massive game for them. We spoke about last week the scenes after the game, after they had stolen a point, or they'd taken a point against Karlsruhe. Kiel was always going to be a tough game for them, a team that had been, you know, playing some pretty good football, and they didn't start particularly well. Gave up a lot of quality chances. And they conceded on 33 minutes. It was a set piece. Not cleared entirely. Patrick Eras was able to get on the score sheet, his first of the season. The hero last week for Magdeburg was Daniel Elfadili. He would score wonderfully nice ball-taking goal just on the halftime break to make it 1-1. Someone we haven't spoken about a lot has been Jan Vita Arp. You know, remember when he was the Wunder Kid and everyone thought he was going to be this incredible footballer? He didn't go to, you know, he didn't go to Chelsea. He stayed with Hamburg. They went to Bayern, and it all fell apart. He scored his first goal of the season at 54 minutes. He's played some different roles, but came on at halftime, made a bit of an impact, and was actually quite good as a halftime substitute. Problem was, despite all of their dominance in the final third, and all of the chances that they had, they left the door ajar. And we know what happens when you don't take your chances. And they didn't take their chances because Magdeburg took theirs. Because on 17 minutes, Tatsuya Ito found Herbert Bockhorn. His effort should have, in my eyes, should have been saved by Timo Schuber. It just should have been saved. I don't understand how that ball went in. Then they thought they had taken the lead. Moments later, when the initial shot from Kwarteng hit the post, Barisatic tucked it home, but he was offside. Then moments later, they found that game-winning goal. It's Atik who finds Kwarteng, and such a nice finish. Just chef's kiss moment where he chips the goalkeeper who's coming out to make himself large. And it's 3-2. Kiel pushed. They huffed and they puffed, but they didn't blow the house down. Magdeburg takes a vital 3 points. They're out of the bottom three. They move to 15th. It's their first win in quite some time. So let's discuss, because the stats are alarming for Kiel in particular, that you cannot have the amount of offensive production in terms of shot creation that they did and come away with so little.
I think... And my own club played this weekend. There is no game that gave me more frustration than this one, to be honest. I mean, we joked about this last week. We joked about how Kiel is so unpredictable, how they can lose to Magdeburg, win against Paderborn, for example. And, I mean, they did lose to Magdeburg, but the way they did is, like, as you've mentioned, as if you look for some sort of karma comes to find you in the end in a dictionary, they're just gonna put a link in to this game into the dictionary. Like, this is the playbook of not to lose a game in any way. And I mean, the funny thing is that we know actually both teams are very good in not being the worst team in this duel, not being the second best, but actually being the better team, but not showing that on the score sheet. Funny enough, Kiel showed that, for example, in the game against Bielefeld, where they had, I think, 22 shots on goal, still lost 4-2. And I always think that this can happen once. This can happen to you once. Should never happen, especially so far into the season. And at the same time, at least, if you do not score your third or fourth goal, defensively, you should really. And I mean, especially after they already conceded the third goal and they were lucky enough it was correctly taken away due to offside. Mm-hmm. Don't go ahead and just concede it once again. I mean, it was a beautiful goal. I'm not going to say anything about that. But we know if Fartley can score, especially after last week, it's only a second goal, but still. Yeah. We know what Kwarteng can do for sure, especially in combination with Artic. What the hell did Hodgson-Key think they were doing? Honest to God. As Marcel Rapp, I wouldn't even find words, because the problem is they didn't play bad.
Yeah.
They did probably the playbook thing to do when you play Magdeburg, give them the possession, lot of turnovers, create counterattacks. They did all that, but it didn't get on the score sheet. And I couldn't believe my eyes when I saw that XG. And I mean, they checked it like three times. They changed it three times since then, but it's always over 5 or 5.38. It's 4.5.
Yeah.
So statistically, you shouldn't lose this. And in the end, like, if you look at the game, heads up to Magdeburg, but as a fan perspective, you were speaking about that video. Obviously, they got 3 points, but the performance still wasn't good.
Mm-mm.
So, yeah, like, I don't know. As obviously, it doesn't matter how good your performance is, but if you, like, look at that video where they drew, and in my opinion played better than this game, but don't know really what to do with this, to be honest. But in the end, it's so frustrating for Kiel, who obviously hope they who play their like second candidate from the lower half of the table, and they will want to look out that they're not going to lose that one as well. Because as we spoke about earlier, if you lose two games, if you win two games, you can make such a huge difference in the table. And Kiel does not want to be pulled into that very, very dangerous region of the table.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And obviously we talk about momentum and consistency and continuity. And, you know, for a team that is eighth, you know, Kiel are just none of those things. They do so many good things. And they were really good in this game. And, you know, watching it, I couldn't comprehend. My brain cannot comprehend what happened. It just doesn't reason. But all my head can comprehend is that Magdeburg scored more goals than Kiel. And that's all that matters. So, I think that's enough from that game. Kiel have got Braunschweig away, and Magdeburg, as we mentioned, they've got St. Pauli at home. Now let's talk about one of the Friday games, Karlsruhe and Greuther Fürth. If we want to talk about games that made no sense whatsoever, this is a prime example, especially when you have advantages, competitive advantages, numerical advantages, but you don't have the scoreline advantage. So let's talk about this Karlsruhe game, because this game was just, yeah. Didn't start well for the hosts. The hosts haven't won since early October, heading into this one. And the one thing you can't do is give goals, which is what they did on 22 minutes. Julian Green's set piece found Tim Breithaupt, who was trying to do the right thing by clearing a ball that Damian Mikowski was never going to get to, but he headed the ball into his own net. No communication with him and Marius Gersbeck. That was clear, as the ball trickled into the side of the goal for 1-0. Then a minute later, Karlsruhe were down to 10 men when Stefan Ambrosius fouled, I think it was Dixon Abiyama. So that was really clumsy. I think that's the word I would use. Clumsy and unnecessary, because there was, you know, when you get booked so early, you're already tying a thin line. I don't know what to say to it. It was just bad. Just not very football smart. But despite this, Karlsruhe found a way back into the game, because on 35 minutes, they won a penalty. Thanks to the assistance of the video assistant referee, Frank Villenborg was told to change his decision, the foul from Meyerhofer on Schleusner. I don't like that foul, because it seems that there's next to no contact. There might be slight contact, but in my opinion, Schleusner is trying to con the referee into giving a foul. He's not trying to win the ball. He sticks a foot out. And as Meyerhofer is trying to clear the ball, he grazes, and I'm going to use the word grazes, Schleusner. But obviously that's a foul now. So penalty, Marvin Vanitek scores, 7th goal of the season for him. What was frustrating to watch about this game was just Fürth's naivety. They really didn't. They pushed some buttons. Marius Gersbeck was up to the task for a lot of them. But then to go behind the way they did really doesn't speak to the reasoning. And I'm pausing because I don't really know what to say, but I'm going to try and speak the words. Because in what seemed like a pretty harmless situation, Mikowski thinks the ball is going out. And this wasn't the first time on Friday night that that particular scene happened. Not in this game, anyway. Mikael Kaufmann just shows all the intangibles that you love. Gut running, pressure, determination to win the ball. He keeps the ball in. And it's still, you know, it's a 3-on-2. Schleusner's in the attack. But the way that Kaufmann and Schleusner open up Fürth, and they get the fat side of the ground, bit of a 1-2 play, and the finish from Kaufmann, slight deflection off Haddadi. So good. That football was so nice. They get the 2-1. They hold on. First win since match day 11. Against Arminia Bielefeld was the last time they took 3 points. I'm sorry. Just can't help it. But, it puts them up to 12th. Fürth dropped to 11th. I think I've had enough to talk about this game because, yeah, there were some... This was a strange game. You could argue that the Ambrosius second yellow was harsh. You could argue that the penalty given for Karlsruhe against Fürth was harsh. But one thing we can say with confidence is that Fürth found a way to lose this game. A game that they had the numerical advantage, they're 1-0 up, then they go to having 11v10, and they conceded twice. And the second goal for me, despite how good the play was from Karlsruhe, was inexcusable of players just not doing the basics. And they allowed a situation that should have been harmless, turned into partially dangerous, turned into catastrophic.
Yeah, and I don't think Fürth fans would like to hear this, but it did remind me a bit of pre-Zorniger games. And I mean, we in a way, we talked about this last week, where we say, okay, the win for Fürth against Nuremberg was deserved. But what happened on the pitch wasn't what we've seen before, what Sonica football is about.
Mm.
And the thing is, because we have the comparison, because the we were wondering what would Fürth look like if Sonica has more time.
Mm.
Is the answer they just gonna keep playing like they did under Schneider? Because then that's not a good answer. That's not an answer you want to hear. But yeah, I think everything we've kind of admired about Fürth under Zorniger was gone in this game. It was partially gone in the game against Nuremberg. And this is where, like, we asking questions, because this is those are the two. Obviously, they won the one of those games, but those are two games against opponents you need to win against, because you're still not out of the relegation fight. And this is why the talks of if they're going to continue, are they going to be in the top 10, kind of top 5? And this is why I said when we did like the preview of the second leg, where I said, I want to see them play for like 2-3 games into the season, because I want to see what Sonica did. And as of now, not completely, like, I don't want to say they're all going to back going to back, back to like the first and match days of the of this season, but like they were in a momentum and they want to find some sort of consistency between Schneider era and first four games Sonica era. And this is not probably the like the point where they're at. For the penalty, I think for me the problem is that it's not a clear mistake not to give that penalty, because Meyerhofer has Schleusner in his back, and they're both only looking at the ball. And even after the third repetition of this scene, I'm still not sure who fell to. Like, you can see it both ways, in my opinion. It's not, or it's just not a foul.
Yeah.
Because I think personally, if that happens in midfield, you would say, okay, it's very difficult to see. And that's fine. It's fine, because it's a not an easy scene to decide. But in my opinion, the decision on the pitch should not have been overruled. That's just my personal opinion. Second yellow for Ambrosius. I mean, I think it's it didn't really agree with Willenborg's line of refereeing in this game. I think in the Sportschau, the commentator was also kind of discussing why you would really get. I mean, in the end, it's a correct decision, but a very harsh one, I would say. But yeah, I mean, Fürth was just too passive, only came in after Karlsruhe nearly scored the 3-1.
Yep.
And still afterwards, it's they deserve to lose this game. Yep. Just it. And they I mean, they don't have an easy opponent coming up with Fortuna Düsseldorf, Kaiserslautern and Hannover. So at some point in this three games, they want to find the way which to go. Are they going to say, okay, we're just going to, like, we don't even know which amount of points will be necessary to stay in the league this year. Because with everything together, probably 10 clubs can have 40 points and they can also be in the relegation battle. So, this is something we cannot be very sure about at this stage. But and this is the problem as well, because like in the Bundesliga, we always say, okay, at that certain point, like this would probably be enough. We don't really have that in the Zweite Liga. We never really have that in the Zweite Liga, but especially not this year. Said it before, between the 11th and the 18th in the Zweite Liga is the same amount of point difference as in the 17th and 18th in the Bundesliga. 4 points, that is. So, Yeah, it's going, but that's why it's so important for Fuhr to find where they're going to see themselves.
Yep.
It's not necessary. Like, I would say as of now, winning or getting a point against Düsseldorf and Kaiserslautern with bonus points at this stage. But what we really will focus on is how they're going to perform, if they're going to find back to the structure, to the physical part they were in before they went into the break. For Karlsruhe, this is the thing. They have those three, we spoke about this before, they have these three massive games coming up. Sandhausen, Jahn Regensburg, Hansa Rostock. And those will be the games which determine whether they can kind of make it out. And I do think those will be the games which determine whether Christian Eichner is going to stay. Because taking that win, but still, so many things are not working for Karlsruhe. Yep. And they will not be able to replicate what they did against Fürth. 1-1 to Sandhausen, Regensburg and Rostock. Especially Rostock is going to be one where I'm not sure what their match plan is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, they're all difficult fixtures. There's the classic saying that there are no easy games, which is just true, even if, because, you know, the game's not played on paper. So, yeah, look, I've got nothing really to add other than, you know, for Karlsruhe, Jerome Gondorf extending his contract till 2024. Gotta love that. So that's good news for them. So, yeah, good weekend for Karlsruhe, a team that was desperately in need of a good weekend. Let's take our final break, and on the other side, we'll discuss our final three games of Match Day 20. We'll take a look at our kick tip, and we'll sign off. Until then, we will talk about our first Group 3 game, which is Fortuna Düsseldorf and Sandhausen. It had been a difficult week for Fortuna Düsseldorf, beaten on the previous match day, but also dumped in the cup at Nuremberg in a penalty shootout. They hosted Sandhausen on Sunday, hoping to turn the tide. They took on Ali Schwarzer's side, who have been just struggling. They're treading water after the defeat, also in the cup at the hands of Freiburg. They were hoping to score a valuable win in the league. This game was, by definition, one-way traffic. One team really, you know, had things going on in attack. That would be Fortuna Düsseldorf. And Sandhausen offered next to nothing. No shots in the first half, four for the entire game, none on target. So it wasn't a question of when, but if. No, that's not right. It was a question of if. Not if, but when. And they would eventually find the breakthrough. It took them an age, 85 minutes in fact, to break Sandhausen's resistance. But they did get the job done. The opening goal coming through Tim Oberdorf. Daniel Ginczek does really well to hold possession. Waits for Oberdorf to make that run. He has so much to do. He gets a little bit lucky. The ball's deflected off Karim Çalhanoğlu. And the ball gets past Patrick Drouas, who'd been nearly impenetrable for the entirety of the game. They would also get a second just 3 minutes later. Jona Nemec, who is one of the younger players that Daniel Thun is sort of integrating into regular first team minutes. He plays a wonderful ball to find Reuven Hennings, and Hennings with his fifth goal of the campaign. The win for Fortuna is vital. It means that they remain sixth, but they've now got a four-point gap to Hanover and Holstein Kiel, and they're 3 points behind Paderborn and Kaiserslautern. They are very much in a good position to pounce if either team fails to win on the weekend when they go head-to-head. Really not much to talk about in this game because it was very much one-way traffic, but one thing that really impressed me was the desire to have the fullbacks be very aggressive. We saw Emmanuel Yor playing as a left back, something that we don't see often without Mikhail Karbovnik. But they, you know, they seem to have a lot of solutions for what Paderborn were doing defensively. It just took a long time, a lot of patience, calmness. But once they broke through, it became a very relief more than anything that Fortuna were going to get the 3 points.
Yeah, and I mean, it was a frustrating game for every Fortuna fan in the stadium, because, as you've mentioned, you kind of knew they need to win this, and that they there was no doubt in they're gonna win it, but they really, really let their defense suffer through this one. Obviously, although they won this game, they lost it with Kovnatsky. That's something. I mean, obviously, for Kovnatsky, it's not ideal, because his future is still to be decided on. Like, he's gone, but where he's gonna go is what I want to say. And I mean, I could still see him in the Zweite Bundesliga. I will obviously see him in the Zweite Bundesliga. But the question is, he probably wants to play a bit higher, maybe Polish first league as well. Sometimes that's what they're going for, or like a team like, I don't know, Mainz, Augsburg, and stuff. They might be one of the addresses he will want to go. Yeah, I mean, similar to probably St. Pauli in the game against Kaiserslautern, really, really struggling to come into that last third of the pitch in attacking. And yeah, obviously Patrick Drewes was the only one of the Sandhausen team wanting to do anything to not lose this game. But yeah, I think for Sandhausen it's very frustrating. They came off that win against Bielefeld, but then afterwards, because I mean, they were not good in that game, and I think maybe they thought with a very, very good and decent performance they had against Freiburg, maybe they could use that. But obviously, maybe Düsseldorf wasn't the place to start. But yeah, they definitely wanna. We spoke about this before. Karlsruhe, and then they're playing Nuremberg. So we're gonna have a lot of matches in the next couple of weeks from teams who are playing each other. Obviously, that means that a lot can change just in two games on the same match day. Like, before you had, like, were 11th in the league, suddenly you're 16th or something like that. So this is something, because as I said before, only 4 points between 11th and 18th. And that's why one game can be so important. At the same time, as I said before, winning one game can mean next to nothing. This is what we're going to talk about next for the next game as well. But yeah, still, I was like, no shot on target at all in 90 minutes, no shot on goal at all in the first half. No problem for Kastmeier whatsoever. I'm still not sure, like, Al-Gadoui still needs to find his role. He mainly is there for winning aerial duels. I do have the feeling. So he has to, obviously, the game is focused on long balls to him. And that's something where I think where players like Kinzombi, even Chanalunu, is where you take away their part of the game. So where I'm not completely sure Al-Gadoui was the right fit for that Sandhausen, when you already know you have players like Kinzombi. And I mean, it's no wonder that someone like the Kinzombi brothers, for example, were involved in the goals against Bielefeld, because this is what they do. And I do have the feeling, if you put Al-Gadoui in, it does not serve as a second plan or a plan B, but it becomes plan A, which erases every other opportunity they have. And in my opinion, you could see this in this game as well. And that's why at some point it was very easy for Fortuna to defend that, because the creative part, what Sandhausen can do if they want to, was completely taken out of this game.
Yeah, they were pretty predictable. It was as if they had the handbook of how to nullify what they were going to do, and, you know, they nullified the danger. But yeah, not good. It wasn't a good week for Sandhausen. Düsseldorf got some pretty, what they would classify as winnable games, and they're still there. They're hanging around. but they need to start. They need to continue picking up results. Right, let's head to one of the 2 6-pointers to end our match day 20 review, and we're going to start with the other Friday night game at the Shuka Arena. It was Arminia Bielefeld against Hansa Rostock. Normally there are burgers on the menu, but Bielefeld, well, the only thing that was there was the nothing burger, because they did a whole lot of nothing for 90 minutes, and they were punished for that. One goal in this game, and it was a goal from Lucas Frueda. We mentioned in the Karlsruhe game where the defender, Daniel Mikulski, his controller disconnected. That similarly happened to Andrada, who should have just put the ball out of play, but his... I don't actually know what he was doing. Anyway, Svante Engelsson gets a big size 13 boot. He's got big feet. He keeps the ball in, and he manages to find Lucas Frodo, who heads the ball in. That's your only goal, 1-0. And Rostock scoring vital points. It moves them up to 10th, thanks to the defeat to Fürth and Eintracht Braunschweig. Bielefeld drop into 16th place. This was bad. This wasn't good. We said it last week in confidence that if they beat Regensburg, it means nothing if you don't beat Rostock or get a point against Rostock. And they're just, to me, watching it, there was nothing. No energy. No real desire. I mean, the Klunzer chance is probably the best one they had all game. It was bad. It was Ule Forte bad, in my opinion. And it's another weekend of back to the drawing board. But unfortunately for Bielefeld, it doesn't get easier.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't really know what Okugawa was, what role he was given. Like, it was kind of, okay, we won with that lineup against Regensburg. I can't play. We're just going to push Okugawa into that, which doesn't make sense because Okugawa is not a replacement for Robin Huck. Not at all. Like, he's a good player, but he's not a one-on-one, like, replacement for Huck. So that didn't make sense to me at all. You had chances, but, I mean... Still, in my opinion, Ananush should have been sent off in the first half, especially if you look, for example, at the Ambrosio send off. That, like, and then obviously Bielefeld fans felt a bit bitter with the referee being Michael Bacher. Mm. We all think back match day one, Silvan Zittler was just being sent off very quickly into the second half. So, yeah, and. I didn't really get how he refereed this game anyway, and when it came to yellow cards. At the same time, in the second time, Ananu wasn't really threatened, so Glöckner didn't have to sub him off because his side wasn't really attacked anymore. Says a lot if one of your defenders is your best player. I was a bit irritated, but because when you looked at the Sportschau highlights, you kept saying, yeah, the game was completely different when Klose came on. The game just got, like, similar to Sandhausen. It just got all long balls. Mm. And this is what I said last week. Klose scoring can be very, very good, but at the same time can be the worst thing that happened to Bielefeld, because then everyone thinks, oh, Klose is on, and Klose himself thinks, okay, I scored, now I'm going to score again. But there's this one scene where I'm not sure what he's trying to do, but he just literally gives it to Kolke, and yeah, the defending was more or less okay until that one scene. I mean, before it was okay. I was okay with the three in the back. But obviously that mistake can never happen. Both from Andrade and Ochipka and then Ramos against Frode. So, like, all three players are at fault there, in my opinion. I'm not even sure what Freiser does in that scene as well, because there are only two players at the one player, and then you leave open the room where that doesn't make sense to me. Not going to get easier, as it's happened before, because they're playing Hamburg and Heidenheim next. For Rostock, Don't think it was a good performance by them either, but once again, it was enough for them. So in the end, they deserve to win. And yeah, that's basically it.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, they were able to find the charm, which was the goal. First win for them since match day 14 when they beat Jan Regensburg. In an area where, and we're going to harp on, we're really sorry, but we're going to harp on this virtually until the end of the season, where picking up points against the teams around you is going to be vital in the quest for safety. That was a big check for Rostock, who have really struggled to put the ball in the back of the net as the second worst defensive team in the league. So it's a small confidence booster, but they've got Darmstadt on Saturday night, and that is going to be a really tall order for them. If they manage to pick up a point there, I think they'll be thrilled. But yeah, I'm not hopeful, I'll be honest. We mentioned Jan Regensburg. We should talk about them as our final game of match day 20. They were at Nuremberg. They were at the Max Morlock Stadion. Over 27,000 made their way to see one of the most gruelingly, agonizingly, painfully teeth-pulling type of game I've seen in a long time. It was awful to watch. Essentially, two teams who had forgotten how to score goals, especially Nuremberg, who have had trouble over the last few seasons to put the ball in the back of the net. Regensburg came close a couple of times, a few half chances here and there, but the goal would come, and it would come for Nuremberg. It would come at the end of a set piece, where Jan were unable to clear the danger, and Enrico Valentini's pile-driving shot beat Jonas Urberg at the near post, and that was the one and only goal in this game. It capped off a pretty good week for Nuremberg, who had progressed to the next round of the DFB Pokal. They win against their relegation and Bavarian rivals, and it means that they move up to 13th, moving ahead of a bunch of teams in the table, whilst Regensburg remain bottom. A lot of people still waiting for a change in manager at Regensburg, but as I said last week, you know, if it's going to happen, it won't happen now. It might happen later in the season. But also, his contract is up at the end of the season. But yeah, this was not one for the purists. This was a offensive struggle in the fairest terms. Neither team really looked like scoring. It needed something special, and Nuremberg got that special.
Yeah, but it was, I mean, I think it was the expected horrible game to watch. I think in the end, Nuremberg deserved to win this, but I mean, in a way, it was very telling that, I mean, the goal was beautiful, but it seemed like, as we would say in German, Verzweiflungstat, so like a last resort kind of option. It had a lot to do that Regensburg just is not, like, their defending in the last 2 weeks is, I just don't have words, I'm sorry. It's, if you're with 10 people in your own half and you can't defend this, don't know. I don't know what to say else. For Nuremberg, still not a good performance. The fans won't care, probably. But yeah, I don't know how they want to win against Heidenheim with that performance, or even get a point. Like, to be honest, as mentioned, I don't have any idea. Let's put it like that. I'm with Regensburg.
Oh boy.
It's not getting better with them. This is the one game, or like the last two games, they shouldn't have lost already, but this is the one game where they definitely should not have lost. And they did anyway, so yeah. And when you, like, they had all their shots on goal in the first half. No shot on target in 90 minutes, and still They did not look any more dangerous than Sandhausen against Düsseldorf, and they played Nürnberg. So, yeah, as mentioned, not the game which you should have lost. And I mean, in a way, Hannover is not the game where you expect them now to win, but Karlsruhe, don't know about you, but I would expect if they don't win against Karlsruhe, Mertensen and Rigovic will be gone.
Yeah, I mean, he's done so well to keep himself in a position of power where a lot of other clubs would have pulled the trigger. So, in that respect, it's not as if he's working with a good core squad. They are, as we said last week, a bottom six team, and for so long they have defied the odds of falling into the bottom three. They've done it on numerous occasions, and this is the truth. They're just not a good team, and this is why they are bottom of the league. And, you know, that's where the bad teams stay. It's obviously more complex than the simplified analysis that I'm providing here, but they're just really bad. And I don't have any solutions. Maybe the game is different if the goal on 6 minutes counts. It was offside, pretty clearly offside. But yeah, that their next three don't fill you with any confidence that they're going to get a point in maybe the Karlsruhe game. But I think Karlsruhe are just a better team. They'll do better things. But for Nürnberg, they're two of their next three, Heidenheim and Hamburg. If they score in those games, I'd be surprised, to be honest. But who knows? We'll see. But yeah, they've got Heidenheim, as Eva mentioned, on the weekend. We'll go to our kick tip for some more positivity. Alex is still leading. He's like buying this guy. He just won't leave the top of the table. 227 points for him. Stein Gebo was the top scorer with 19 points. Congrats for getting 19 on what was an extraordinarily difficult match day to predict. And for that, we're going to say goodbye. We hope everyone has a fantastic weekend of Zweite Bundesliga football. I hope it is just as chaotic as it was last week and the week before that. And maybe the week before that as well. Until then, thank you for joining us. We'll be back next Wednesday to do it all again when we discuss all the action from Match Day 21. Until then, stay safe, stay healthy, and we'll see you next time when the Zweite Bundesliga returns.